to order, and we will open a public hearing on House Bill 2301. Ms. Jordan, will you present the new bill to us?
Yes, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, a group of folks on the Oregon Forest Land Protection Fund met with the department on Friday, and they had a proposal that they wanted to have the committee entertain. The co-chairs have approved most of their their suggestions. So what you have in front of you now is a hand-engrossed version that the co-chairs approve, raising the annual expenditure limit of the fund to $15 million and raising the reserve base of the fund to $22.5 million with a sunset of June 30th, 2005. It eliminates language requiring the insurance premium be paid by the general fund and makes no change in the Oregon Forest Land Protection Fund rates at this time. This is with an assumption that a budget note will be included in the budget report for the department to conduct an interim review and analysis of coverage of fire suppression costs above the limits of the fund, including commercial insurance, with the report back to the Legislative Emergency Board.
Excuse me, Susie, can I break in just a second?
Yes.
We do have a sign-up sheet. This is a public hearing, so anyone who would like to testify, please sign up at the table. And can we finish? Wait till she's done.
And I am done.
Okay. Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. A question, Ms. Jordan. I just want to make sure that I understand what you have explained to us, that ostensibly the discussion that we had last week was that it was going to raise the fund to 22.5. This now drops it back down to $15
million. No, the fund reserve base would still be 22.5. That was the discussion last week, and $15 million. That hasn't changed from last week. What's changed from last week is that there will be no increase in assessments or rates to to fill the fund up, because the agency already has the authority to raise those rates if the fund does not reach the limits that are set by statute. And it also gives a chance then for the work group to take another to look at whether or not this is the kind of insurance or program that we want for the state, if that still makes sense.
Follow up, Mr.
That's
Chair.
The budget.
Follow up.
It also inherently makes some assumptions about how severe the fire season is going to be, does it not?
Mr. Chair, Representative Johnson, we already know that the fire insurance policy deductible is $15 million, so yes.
Okay. Any other questions from staff?
Can I get some clarification, Mr. Chair? In Section 6, the last clause in the bill, what's been omitted is a piece that says an appropriation from the general fund made to the Emergency Fire Cost Committee through the State Forestry Department expressly for this purpose. If no such appropriation is made, the committee may pay the premium for monies available. And that part is deleted. So what it says now is any premium for such insurance shall be paid from the Oregon Forest Land Protection Fund. So this deletes the ability to use general fund for that purpose?
It deletes the requirement that the general fund be used for that purpose, not the ability. It retains current law, is in effect what it does.
Other questions?
And could I just get clarification then on current law? Can you take me through that?
Current law requires that the state purchase insurance for fire protection, that it be paid out of the Oregon Forest Land Protection Fund. In cases where we have reached the limit of the expenditure limit in the Forest Land Protection Fund, the agency has requested from the Emergency Board funds to pay the insurance premium or to backfill up to the limit of the deductible so that the insurance premium can kick in.
And what you're saying is backfill general fund into the Forest Protection Fund to cover the...
In effect, yes. It doesn't. We don't actually transfer it into the Forest Land Protection Fund. We use it to pay the expenditures that would have gone over that amount in order to reach that limit.
And so taking this verbiage out of the bill maintains the situation that you just described.
Yes.
Thank you.
Again, let me state, is there anyone in the audience who'd like to testify on this bill? Bill. Okay.
Well, we should. This is a historic occasion.
I'm suspicious.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Johnson.
Even though, Mr. Chair, there are no volunteers, it might be useful if the chair could exercise his prerogative to ask some of the groups that were in the discussion to come up and edify and inform the committee about the substance of some of the discussions.
I think that would be very appropriate. Representative from OFIC and Christina, would you like to? Which would be Ray.
You wanted to hear from the department first. That's the reason we were being hesitant.
No, Mr. Chair, it's significant that usually the agency sits in the front row. They had chosen that close to the door.
Mr. Chair, could you invite the agency as well for their comment?
Sure. This would be interesting. Hear what Mr. Stone has to say.
Let's hear from the department first.
Okay. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Charlie Stone, Assistant State Forester for the department. I think Susie indicated that, as she said, we've had a meeting on Friday. A couple of different proposals were batted about. The piece that's missing from what's in the Hannon Gross bill that was the major point of contention was still a matter of who should pay the insurance premium, whether, you know, the bill as it was originally written had it being paid in the future out of the general fund. The landowners who were represented at the meeting felt strongly that the landowners through the fund should not pay the insurance premium in the future, and a couple different mechanisms were attempted to balance against that. In the end, we as Ms. Jordan indicated, the proposal was carried back to the co-chairs that would have included a different proposal of repealing the statute that provided for the payment of insurance from the fund, and that's not been carried forward. From the department's standpoint, we could frankly accept a number of different possibilities in that arena, but I'm sure you'll hear a different point of view on that from the landowners in terms of fewer options that they're interested in pursuing. At this point, our interests in the bill are to, again, have a well-funded system. We know what the rules are, and we know what our instructions are for fighting fire into the next biennium. The bill as it's presented could work for the department. The proposal that went to the co-chairs where the section is repealed could work for the department, and then we also talked about kind of an in-between measure after the meeting that would have the section 6 there 477775 repealed after the 2004 fire season, so we'd know what the system was for this biennium, and we'd have insurance potentially available during that, but then would kind of force the discussion in the 05 session as to what the structure will be in the future.
Ray Wolfson, Oregon Forest Industries Council, thank you for inviting us to speak. Mr. Stone's description of the meeting on Friday is accurate. The piece that's not put forward at the moment for your consideration is the statute that mandates insurance, and I think there is two mandates in this statute. One is the state shall buy insurance, and the second is the mandate that the landowner's fund will pay the premium. it seems to me, even if that statute made sense when it was enacted back in either 89 or 91, I don't remember which one, it really makes very little sense today, given the fact that we've had major claims against the policy in the last couple of years and just the general chaotic condition of the global insurance market makes the purchase of insurance problematic. Basically, we have a policy this year that's really kind of marginal in terms of whether or not it really pencils out and makes sense for the state. And I think if you could remove those mandates and have the discussion during the interim about what really makes sense in terms of having an efficient and cost-effective fire protection system, I think that would be the best course to take at this time. And just to us, it doesn't make sense to require the state to buy an insurance policy, even if it's a bad decision. So we would, again, based on our discussions on Friday, we would be willing to cover the additional exposure that somebody's got to cover on the higher deductible this year, because our expenditures are currently capped at $10 million a year. We got a $15 million deductible. Somebody's got to cover that extra $5 million risk. We'd be willing to do that for both this year and next year if necessary, if insurance is even available next year. And as Mr. Stone indicated, we would cover the premium cost again this year. That was basically the way we left the meeting on Friday, and then the mandate would be repealed. Those were the three things. Now, subsequent to that, there was some discussion about would the landlords be willing to cover the premium cost again for the 2004 fire season, and I think we would be. I don't want to speak for small woodlands, but I think we would be. But, again, that mandate is what, you know, is kind of makes this an appealing package to us, so we're repealing the mandate. So I think that hopefully that's relatively clear. I'm not sure.
Let me be real clear, Ray. The industry is willing for this bounty and to cover the deductible and the premium for both years?
That's correct, Mr. Chairman. OFIC would be, again, Christina needs to.
And what is the urgency, just I want it on the record, the urgency of removing the law at this time then?
Mr. Chairman, I think another part of the discussion on Friday was that there would be a budget note that would really mandate a full-blown analysis of this whole system during the interim. And I think our view is if we started out with a blank piece of paper instead of an existing law that has requirements in it that really are antiquated in our view, we would be more likely to really do what's needed in terms of hard-headed analysis during the interim. Repealing the mandate does not mean you couldn't purchase insurance. The option to purchase insurance would still be available. It would even be possible for the fund, the landlord, to pay for it. There would be no absolute prohibition on that. But it wouldn't be a mandate either to buy it in the first place or who should pay for it. Those two things would be removed. And it just seems like that would precipitate a better discussion during the interim.
Senator Johnson.
I'm trying to understand this. The private industry steps up and says we'll pick up the premium and this gap for the next 2 years on the condition that the statute go away and then we all sit down and talk. How acceptable is it if the statute doesn't go away? I mean, we're facing what could be a catastrophic forest fire year given conditions out in the field. As you pointed out, the chaotic world insurance market. This is what I hear you saying is industry will talk if we get rid of the statutory requirement to buy insurance. Will you not talk if the statutory requirement stays?
Representative Johnson, if it does stay, then there's really kind of the package is kind of unbalanced, particularly with the fees not being increased, and we don't believe the fees need to be increased for the fund. If our exposure is increased to $15 million, the likelihood that fund is going to end up in a deficit, it is a certainty the fund will end up in a deficit if we have a bad fire year. So next spring, we're going to be looking at significant surcharges on our taxes. And if we carry that over for a second year and have the same experience again with a $15 million exposure, we have another surcharge of significant tax increases. So the financial risk to us is significant. And so, again, this mandate for insurance is something that we honestly believe is an antiquated statute. And
Mr. Chair, if it stayed the way that it was, the statutory requirement was maintained, Would you be adverse to sitting down in the interim and trying to work out a plan that addressed your concerns? Or is your willingness to come to the table conditioned on the statute being changed?
Representative Johnson, no, we would clearly be willing to discuss. We've got a lot at stake here. This is an important.
We all do.
Right. So clearly we would be willing to anywhere, anytime, talk to anybody about this.
Thank you.
Representative Martin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think that this bill is more than fair, and we have discussed, I think, at great length in a number of meetings that we had, the fact that there's a lot of problems with this whole program. The problem that is clearly coming into the forefront relative to the insurance policy is just what Mr. Wilkinson outlined. The policy is becoming so expensive that the amount of money that we stand to save by having the policy is decreasing and decreasing. And I think that we do need to have a lot of discussion over the interim about where the point is at which we tip over and clearly establish that. And I think that in the public hearing for the department's budget, we also discussed that. But I think there's other problems with the way this is set up that go beyond just the problems that we're trying to grapple with because of what's happening in the insurance markets. And that is that I think that the whole premise, the whole paradigm that the process is funded on has shifted since it came into being. And I don't know how valid it is anymore. And I think that with the changing, with what's going on in our ability to harvest because of environmental constraints and set-aside constraints and public policy decisions that we're making, that having a system that's based on timber harvest to fund it is pretty much outmoded. And it was my intention during the last interim to sit down and have a discussion around this issue. And we got all involved in the special sessions and put all our energy into balancing the budget and never got to this. But I think that there needs to be a very open discussion about where the money is being spent to fight fires. And I did, in fact, make a request in the last interim that when the local jurisdictions reported their firefighting expenses to the department, that they make it clear how much of the money was allocated into different areas. And I'm particularly talking about the urban interface here, that the department isn't directly responsible for fighting structure fires, but there are significant decisions that are made on the ground in terms of deployment of equipment and strategies for fighting fires that do impact the allocation of costs that are made based on the issues that are related to urban interface housing type issues. And so there are also issues with uninsured lands over in eastern Oregon. We got into the issue with the fire that started on the Indian Reservation and jumped the river. And there just are a number of things, I think, that the whole premise that we have the firefighting system based on need to be reexamined in light of the changing use of forests and who ends up being protected with that money. So I think that it is more than fair that we take the statutory requirement off to have the insurance policy and discuss that very open-endedly. And I think that I do agree with the budget note very strongly that'll throw this into an interim situation and have it looked at.
Thank you. Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't think that Representative Morgan and I differ on some of the points that she raised. What it boils down to is leave statute on and talk, take statute off and talk. And I think that I heard Mr. Wilkins say we're fine either way. I've heard the department at least indicate that there seems to be a little uncertainty here, at least suggested by the remarks that you made when you first sat down, that you're not quite sure if this works or this doesn't work. And if there's no prohibition, as evidenced by the testimony that we just heard, on talking, no lack of willingness to talk, why not leave the statutory requirement there, talk, and then come back with something that seems to have a little bit higher level of agreement than at least you've evidenced exists today?
Would someone like to respond?
Chair Messerly, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Christina McNitt with the Oregon Small Woodlands Association. I'll try to jump in here and not speak for OSIC, but we have been negotiating this together. There's one more piece to on and talk or off and talk or whatever that may be, and that is increasing the limitations. Oregon Forest Land Protection Fund is solely funded with landowner assessments or four or five or six different taxes. We are willing, in exchange for repealing the statute, we're willing to increase our liability by 50%, the landowners are, to cover the cost of the deductible and to raise our reservation base. But it's important to us that the ongoing sort of prejudicial statutory outcome that the Oregon Forest Land Protection Fund pick up the insurance premium that does not insure forest land, it insures the general fund against the cost of catastrophic fire. We'd like to enter into this interim with a budget note reviewing those policy questions and come to an open ended resolution that we can put forward in the 2005 session that doesn't automatically have something in statute that directs one party or another to purchase a tool that may or may not be useful in today's environment.
Any other comments, questions from the committee? There's one aspect that I don't know has been mentioned, that is the markets that we're facing right now today. And we have authority committee from the co-chair to pass this budget as Hanley Gross. We do not have the authority to pass this budget out with that clause in it.
Say that one more time, Mr. Chairman.
The co-chairs have not approved passing this bill out with
repealing
the clause.
No, I'm confused.
Mr. Chair, repealing the insurance requirement is right now the current law requires that that insurance be purchased and that it be paid by the Oregon Forest Land Protection Fund. And the landowners would like to have that section repealed in this bill. And that is what the co-chairs are not approving.
And by doing that, functionally, to achieve that, we would be leaving in the language on lines 31 to 33.
Mr. Chair, no, we do not leave in those lines. These lines were added to require the general fund to pay the insurance costs. That's why we're taking them out.
Okay.
Chair. Can I make one further comment? Just so there's no confusion, Representative Johnson. Currently, all these issues are going to be discussed during the interim, and we're going to be part of that. The Hand and Gross bill that Ms. Jordan described to you is something we're not in support of right at the moment, as Christina indicated. In other words, it's just a lose-lose for us. We're very much exposed to significant tax increases through this surcharge mechanism, and there's nothing on the other side that helps our position at all. Insurance mandate would do that, or repealing insurance mandate. So I just wanted to hopefully that's clear, more clear now.
Representative Johnson.
So with the co-chairs failing to give approval to eliminate the statutory requirement, you're saying that you're not in support, you have no place to go, you will talk, however.
If the legislature passes the bill, despite our opposition to this option, we would certainly obviously have to accept that decision, and we would be part of the discussions during the interim.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Dubey.
But do I understand correctly that if we do not remove the language from the statute, you will work to defeat House Bill 2301 without that language in it? I mean, that's what I think I'm hearing, is give me one or we take the other.
Mr. Chair and members, and maybe we're a little bit ahead of ourselves, we really did have this meeting just Friday morning and trying to get back to all the co-chairs, and obviously some of you on this committee we haven't yet talked to ourselves. that this whole bill was brought to you by the Emergency Fire Cost Committee, representing the landowners who pay into the fund that pays the insurance and the insurance premium and has a reserve base. And the compromise, the way this was balanced, was that we would increase our limitation and our exposure in exchange for having the general fund pay the insurance premium. We recognize that in this financial situation, that's unrealistic. And we're willing to step forward and pick up the premium cost, not only for this year, but also for next year. And rather, then the exchange would be that the statutory language, frankly, all of Section 6 sits on page 3 of House Bill 2301, be repealed. So it doesn't prejudice the discussion during the interim about three critical questions. One, whether or not insurance is the right way to go now in the wake of September 11th and the costs that the insurance market is facing. Two, if insurance should be maintained, who should pay? And then the third question is, within the Forest Land Protection Fund, the equity of who pays into that fund. We would be willing to do our homework and continue working with the co-chairs in trying to secure some support for repeal of Section 6, if that'd be the chair and the committee's direction.
Christina, this bill was pre-session filed. Why are we just now hearing about the requirement that we remove a section of law?
Mr. Chair and members, that was negotiated on Friday morning when we realized that the proposal brought forward by the Emergency Fire Cost Committee to increase the limitation from $10 million to $12.5 was not enough because of the insurance premium now being $15 million that the landowners would need to shoulder, an additional $2.5 million for a total of $15 million, and then to keep the 1 to 1.5, I think, ratio in the reserve base, that we needed to increase that as well to $22.5 million. We were having those discussions on Friday with the department and other interested parties, and that's when we talked about how onerous this process and this relationship is. You know, on the protection side, there's a long and established relationship between the general fund and the private through the forest protection associations about providing protection, and there's a good relationship between the public sector and the private sector. But on the suppression side, it's really been shouldered by the forest landowners, and I think in the report that the Emergency Fire Cost Committee put together this last interim shows that in the last 10 years, the Forest Land Protection Fund has put from landowners $63 million into the cost of fire suppression, and the general fund has put in $9 million, not because we have a statutory relationship or a decision on behalf of this legislative body, but because we were broke. So we would just like to continue some discussion about how we have a relationship and who should pay and what we should be buying. But we're concerned that if we increase our liabilities and our responsibilities, that there really is no motivation to find a different outcome during the interim if there's a statutory direction that's predetermined. And that's our biggest concern.
If we follow the agreement and we leave the agreement that has been reached in this building and leave the language in, and 2301 does not pass, I assume that when we hit the end of the money, if we have a bad forest fire year, that we will simply burn up land. Is that a safe assumption?
Mr. Chair, Senator Dukes, the way that if that scenario played out, we'd be with the current law as it exists, with a $10 million expenditure limit and a $15 million insurance deductible. So basically, we'd fight fire for $10 million if we couldn't. I guess we'd have to have some instruction about whether we keep fighting fire or not, but presuming that we did, there'd be a $5 million gap that would have to be covered somehow before the insurance could kick in, which normal circumstances we'd be coming to the emergency board in that case for that $5 million versus at the end of the game if we had spent all the money in the fund coming to get the insurance premium paid for, if that's clear.
So you would have to stop and wait until they scheduled an emergency board meeting and...
Well, presumably it wouldn't work out quite that way, but there would be a $5 million liability.
I say it's poker.
Other questions, comments?
Just a comment. I think that, if I'm remembering correctly, that the department has a longstanding agreement with the emergency board that they can't expend the funds without coming to the board. But still, I think that there's an issue here of exposure to the general fund.
Chairman, could I make one more comment?
Yes.
In response to Senator Duke's question about the bill being pre-session filed and just hearing about it now, we support the bill that was introduced. The bill that was introduced shifts the, maintains the mandate, it shifts the cost from the landowners to the general fund. Clear on that point.
Other comments from committee? You know, it's a difficult issue for us at the state level to deal with right now simply because of the state finances. And one of the concerns I have, and I know the co-chairs have, is what kind of a position does this put the state in? How big of a commitment can we make at this time? And we discussed pretty thoroughly this morning just how far, how much of a reserve can the state have at this point for the forest fires. And I think all of us are committed that we have to protect our forest. We don't have any choice on that, and it's simply, how do we go about funding the entire program? And also, as a timberland owner myself, I recognize very clearly that we cannot insure our timber itself. So the next best option is to insure as best we can, or be assured that we have protection from fire. And so I think this is a state-private partnership that we simply have to maintain. And during these unsettled times, particularly since we in Oregon right now don't know if we've hit the bottom either. I realize that the industry's in the same boat, as I said earlier, with low prices on the market right now. It's not a fun time for anyone. So it's, as I said before, we do not have approval from the co-chairs to pass anything out today except for the hand engrossed bill, which we have before us. Any other remarks you folks would like to make? Thank you. we'll come back to order. Susie, would you give a report on our discussion, your discussions with the co-chairs?
Well, Mr. Chair, you asked me to talk to the co-chairs about if we change the language to may, from shall to may purchase insurance, whether the co-chairs would approve that or not. We had a discussion about what that would mean, and they didn't feel like there would be enough information for us to make that decision if the board chose not to, without the interim study, that is. If the board chose not to purchase insurance for one of the years and may expose the general fund to more liability than if they had purchased the insurance. And without the interim study and the review of their information coming forward, they are reluctant to make that change in the statute. So we're back to where we were when we brought this in.
Thank you. What I'm going to do at this point is to close the public hearing, and we will not go into work session until we've had more discussions with the industry and the co-chairs. With that, we close the public hearing on House Bill 2301 and open the work session on House Bill 5022. And Senator Shields, welcome to our committee.
I'm just going to sit here and be a nuisance.
Yes. Mr. Chair,
Mr. Jordan,
members of the committee, you have in front of you the LFO recommendations for the Department of Forestry budget, House Bill 5022. The first page shows a chart with a summary of a little historical view of the agency's budget, beginning with their 99.01 actuals and the governor's recommended budget with the LFO recommended figures in the column at the far right. The first section of the budget is technical adjustments. These are the statewide reductions to the Attorney General rate, the DAS assessment, employee compensation freeze, and inflation adjustments. So that's detailed on the in the table on the second page. And I would the total amount for the inflation adjustment is $3,082,573. The total for employee compensation freeze is $1,347,558. The total for Attorney General rate is $45,733. And the total for DAS assessment reduction is $153,534 for a total reduction of $4,629,398. And I would seek a motion to approve the technical adjustments at this time so we don't have to go through it in detail.
Mr. Chair,
in every program.
So moved.
We've heard the motion. Senator Gooch.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, Mr. Chair. I'm happy now. I'm just curious. The under state forests, it says that the total of all of these things is $1,687,440. And I'm curious as to what happens to that money.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, that money at this point would just go back into the agency's ending balance unless we directed them to spend it in their program area.
Mr. Chair, there may be some other changes to the budget before we're done, and I'm just curious as to whether the agency has any intention of sharing the reductions that we're making to their budget with the cities and counties and special districts and such.
Would the department like to respond to that? Everybody's looking at everyone else.
Mr. Chair, I'm Marvin Brown. I've recently taken Jim Brown's place as a state forester, and the reluctance is because this is my third day in the office, so we're still getting our act organized, and I'd like to just turn it over to Clark to address that.
And welcome to the state of Oregon.
Yeah, you came in at a real interesting time.
Yeah, I did.
Chair Messerly, committee members, Clark Seeley, Assistant State Forester for the Department of Forestry. Senator Dukes, I think to the extent that we can share the information on the state forest piece of the budget as we know it today with the constituents and the stakeholders and county government, we certainly will. My understanding of these particular reductions is, in effect, simply lowering our overall limitation for the state forest program. These would be dollars that would not be spent because of these changes, and therefore the limitation in our budget be lowered based upon that.
And that's my understanding, too. The statute is written with the 36% or thereabouts as a ceiling, not a floor. And so that's the most you can take. You can take less. And one of my questions as we go through all of this, when there are reductions, is at any point is that going to get shared with the partners, or is that all just going to go into the fund? And ultimately, I have questions about the fund, too, which is, I understand, in pretty healthy shape. So I'm hoping that we can find a way of acknowledging that perhaps we don't need the full 36% given the kinds of harvests we're going to be doing in the future, and that we can share that with some of the folks who are going through the same recession we're going through.
Chair Messerly, Senator Dukes, I think to the extent, at least as we've seen the legislative fiscal recommendations for both budget notes as well as the reference to looking at the state forest fund balances during the interim with the interim audit committee, I believe at least we'll get to those questions.
That may be clear, Mr. Seeley. I would assume that the state shares the net off of the receipts of those foresters, but am I taking this wrong?
Chair, Messerly, members of the committee, just in terms of thinking about, let's think about gross timber sale revenues to start with. A purchaser buys a state timber sale for a set price, and there's a total dollar amount of value of that timber sale. We call that the gross value, and all of those dollars come to the agency initially. Then through the process prescribed by law, we redistribute from that gross dollar amount the share of money that goes to the counties and local taxing districts, the 63.75%, and then we retain the balance of that by the agency to run the program. So the gross begins at what the timber sale itself's value is and what the purchaser pays us in total dollars for the timber sale, and then we often talk, and you do too, about the net that goes to counties and the net that goes to the agency.
Senator Duke. Actually, you take the first 25% off the top before anybody gets anything, and then you take another percentage, the number escapes me. That's what the formula calls for.
Additional 15% beyond that.
Not that I'm saying it's bad, but that's the way it works, but it is a maximum amount, and we take the maximum.
Well, let me ask one more question to clarify this. So these reductions are actually a savings to the state of Oregon and not a savings to the amount of money that would be, so that there would be more that would go to the counties and the governments. Is that right?
Chair Messerly and members of the committee, it's really, I think we have to be careful not to mix budget expenditure limitation, which is what this is, with the revenue stream that comes in as a result of timber sales. And that is simply to say that with a budget expenditure limitation reduction like this, that doesn't necessarily alter automatically the revenue stream of timber sale dollars in revenue and where that money gets distributed. If we do have an expenditure reduction, though, under the current law, the revenues will continue to come in under the formula, and at least the state share will continue to go into the state fund. Theoretically, if we have more revenue and less expenditure, then that fund balance would in fact go up, which I think is part of what Senator Dukes is speaking to.
Or you could choose to take a lower percentage for a period of time and reduce the fund.
Senator Messerly, Chair Messerly, Senator Dukes, I believe my reading is that that could be the case or would be the case if the statutes themselves were amended and adjusted. I'm not sure that that's just a given in terms of the statutory construction as it stands today.
Mr. Chair, my understanding is that the statute says that the state gets up to a certain amount. So that if that's the case, I'm trying to remember what I asked. I asked the county's lobbyist on this issue. So that down for if that's the case, then you could choose to take less.
Senator Deuce, if that's the case, I would agree with you. I'm not sure that is the case, though. I'm not sure that it isn't just. I'm not sure that it isn't just a straight straight percentage of the gross revenues goes this direction and a percentage goes that direction, so forth.
Representative Krieger.
Yes, Mr. Chair. Timber selling for $500,000 now. Costs that you incur, or whatever they are, $700 a thousand. You incur whatever costs that you have. There's $200 a thousand difference. How can the department do the same job with $200? Your percentage of that $200,000 percentage difference, 5 and 7, don't get the percentage of that when it's lower. How do you do the same job, or was the figure too much when it was up to 700,000?
Senator Messerly, Representative Krieger, we build obviously not only the biennial budget for the biennial process, but as a management tool, we also build annual fiscal budgets for the state forest program. We do it precisely for part of the reason we do it is for the reason you just identified, and that is to see at any given point on an annual basis where the market is in relation to revenues and then our own expenditures to match that. And as we see or anticipate a downturn in the market and reduced revenues, then our fiscal budget process will ratchet down our expenditure plans for that next fiscal year. And we'll do less contract services, for example, may do less pre-commercial thinning or those kinds of activities to keep ourselves in line with expected revenue. We do produce on a twice yearly basis a revenue projection that tries to take all the market conditions we know of today and projects ahead what we anticipate revenues to be for about a 5 or 6 year horizon. And again, it's almost a continual updating process to try and capture the market condition changes.
Other questions or comments while they're reviewing the statutes? Senator Dukes, how are we doing?
Well, Mr. Chair, this is what happens when you trust a lobbyist to tell you what the statute says in the area that they lobby. But it looks as though it is, they do automatically get that money up to a certain level. Still trying to figure out what happens after that. Looks as though all we're doing in cutting this stuff is dumping money back into a fund that it is highly unlikely we will need any time in the short term.
Part of the agreement that was made between the counties and the state, though, was that, as I understand, at the time of the fire, the counties didn't have the capital to replant and clean the forest up and get it back into production. So part of that 36% is repayment of that investment that the state has made, plus the cost
to
manage.
What about there with that? Just about
to get off. Mr. Chair and members of the committee, I believe that when we get to the discussion on the ending balances, that you can, we can amend the bill to require do a notwithstanding this statute and have that money distributed that we save in this budget to the counties or the parties that would get the normal distribution.
Mr. Chair, I would agree with Ms. Jordan that that would be the appropriate place to have the discussion about how to disperse the other funds that are taken out, or that where the expenditure limitation is decreased, and that the discussion about how to use those funds rather than having them be in the ending balance should be in that part of the budget.
Okay, more discussion? Are you okay, Senator Dukes, to pass this motion?
Sure.
Is there more discussion? No more discussion. Objection. Motion carries.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The next page is a summary of the vacancy savings in this budget. The agency has 792 vacancies. That's the equivalent of 304.02 FTE. And I have summarized the status of those positions in the next category, 1, 2, and 3. The first one is positions that were identified as critical to the health, welfare, and public safety programs of the agency. There were 317 positions, the equivalent of 103.95 FTE. Most of those positions, 275 plus a few, you'll see are seasonal positions that are in recruitment are filled. The second category are positions that were identified as necessary to maintain the essential program oversight. There are 345 positions in this category, the equivalent of 143.66 FTE. And again, most of those positions are, or the largest share of those positions are seasonal positions. There are 47 positions on the vacancy list that are part of policy option packages. That's the reason they're vacant, is they haven't been approved yet. I am recommending reductions in the program areas for protection from fire, equipment pool, state-owned forest lands, forest practices, and nursery. That's a total of 109 positions, the equivalent of 37.49 FTE. And I have worked with the agency and am recommending that there be some fund shifting or some other position adjustments, and that's a total of 33 additional positions and 17.31 FTE. So in total, as we go through each of the program areas, I will identify for you where those position vacancies or adjustments are, but it's 142 positions and 54.8 FTE. And that, for right now, that is just for information. We will deal with those as we get in the program area. So now, page one, we start the program area discussion. The first program area is administration. Just to familiarize you with the chart that I have presented to you, there is a corresponding item number on the left-hand side, and then a description of what the package is and where the changes that LFO is recommending will be shown in the columns to your right, with my recommendation in the last column. And then I have a little column there for subcommittee action, so you can keep track in case we don't finish today. So item number one is policy package 101. This is a public share fire fund analysis that abolishes a trades maintenance worker two and an office specialist two to establish a fiscal analyst two and reclassify an accountant one to a fiscal analyst two. Two, complete analysis of cost allocation and development of an accounting subsystem to address alignment of budget development for the public share fire program and support matching accounting systems with the biennial budget development in orbits. And I'm recommending approval of the position. There's a net FTE reduction of 1.32 and a net budget reduction of $5,344. I'm also recommending a budget note, which I'll talk about when we get to the end, directing the agency to provide a status report to the emergency board by no later than April 2004 on the progress of aligning accounting and budget systems for the department and in particular the public share fire program. There was a budget note in the last biennial budget for a work group of people to review the accounting and budgeting for the public share fire program, and as a result of that,
We identified a need to do some more work on this, but it would take some additional staff. And I am only recommending this with the understanding that that work is going to be accomplished in time for us to do their budget in the next biennium. There's some work to be done there. There's also a need with the new budget system, ORBITS, for the agency to align their accounting system so that it matches up with ORBITS, and there are a number of agencies getting a budget note in that respect, and we want to be able to do that. And with the shifting and reduction of some vacancies, they're able to do this in a way that doesn't cost more money.
So, Mr. Chair, there actually is two accounting issues going on here that need to be addressed in budget notes. One of them is the standard ORBITS alignment so that you're not hand-doing everything. And what was, can you recap again what the first issue is?
The public share fire fund. When the agency develops their budgets for a public share fire fund, they have to do it on an annual fiscal year basis. And oftentimes, as they do that, the information that they have for the budget isn't prepared far enough in advance for them to advance it in the budgeting process for the biennium. Also, their contract positions. So, and also the inflation doesn't roll up in the normal way because of the way they have to account for it on an annual basis. The other piece of that is that some of their positions are contract positions with the associations, and that doesn't roll up the full cost of positions in budgeting for the public share fire fund. So they end up having to request an exception, and then years like we have had in the last two biennium where the general fund has little resource, that often gets denied because we're not approving those kinds of increases, so inflation doesn't keep up with what they're doing. We believe that if we can get their budget to be more aligned with the ORBITS system, that a lot of that will be taken care of in the normal.
Just roll up on
that's
that.
Correct.
I understand. Mr. Chair.
Senator Morgan.
I move that the committee accept the LFO recommendation for Package 101 in the Administration Department.
You've heard the motion. Discussion of the motion. Objection. Motion carries.
Item number two is Policy Package 181, which simply moves the portion of the administration budget for their facilities maintenance program to a separate budget unit. That would be taking $3,320,187 and one FTE out of this program area and creating a new one, which we will we'll do later. So I recommend approval of this.
I'm just paraphrasing. We take it out here and put it back in someplace else later in the program.
Yes.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Morgan.
I move that the committee accept the LFO recommendation on package 181 in the Administration Department.
Discussion? Objection? Motion carries.
We have already approved items 3, 5, 6, and 7. There are no vacant position adjustments here because we dealt with those in 101. Yeah. Item number 8 is LFO package 6 to shift debt service to a separate program. Like the facilities maintenance program, the agency has requested that we move their debt service out of the administration program into a separate budget unit, and I'm recommending approval of that.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Morgan.
I move that the committee accept the LFO recommendation on LFO package 6 to deal with debt service in the administrative department.
Item 8, LFO package 6.
I'm sorry,
you're right. Discussion? Objection? Motion carries. Apologize.
Item number 9 is LFO package 7. The agency has requested consideration for a federal grant administration program. Their federal funds have increased significantly over the last two biennia, and they're expected to continue into this biennium, 2003-05. They're requesting an accountant 3, an accounting technician 3, and two seasonal student positions to monitor federal fund expenditures, compliance, and reporting. This would be 100% federal funds. The cost is $578,914, 3 FTE, and I'm recommending approval.
Representative Morgan?
We are looking at package 8, correct?
Yes.
H7, item number 9.
This makes a lot more sense to me. I move that the committee accept the LFO recommendation on package 7 in the administrative department.
Okay, the motion. Is there discussion? Objection? Motion carried.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Item number 10, LFO package 8. Our position adjustments, that's the category that we talked about with the vacancy table in this program area. These adjustments are to eliminate 16 positions, 5.54 FTE, and establish 4 positions, an HVAC control technician, a grounds maintenance worker 2, a fiscal analyst, and an accountant 2, to reclassify a word processing technician 2 to an office specialist, a property specialist 2, and an office specialist 2 to an office specialist 1, and a trades maintenance worker to a trades maintenance worker 2. To shift funds to increase an electrical public design specialist by 0.42 FTE, and a photographer 2 by 0.42 FTE, and to transfer an IS3 and an IS6 from forest practices to administration. There is corresponding reduction in the forest practices program of $175,333 general fund for this increase on general fund in this program. This is a total package of $46,377 and a net reduction of 5.54 FTE, and I'm recommending approval.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Morgan.
I move that the committee accept the LFO recommendation on package 8 in the administrative area.
Discussion. Representative Johnson.
Thank you. Just, Ms. Jordan, these are all reclass ups, are they not?
I'm sorry?
These are all reclass ups, are they not?
Yes, they are all reclass ups or establishing new positions. But they have eliminated 16 positions to make this. They have a need for a different skill set.
Okay. More discussion? Objection? Hit the gavel quicker.
Item number 11 is LFO package 9. This is a co-chair's one-time shift of general fund to the Pacific Coast Salmon Recovery Fund. Maximizes the funds from that program to avoid reductions in Oregon plan expenditures and make general fund available to address the statewide revenue shortfall. And the adjustments in this package are $96,346 of general fund and an increase of $96,346 other fund. The funds come into the state as federal funds, but they will come into this agency as other funds because they pass through OEB. And I'm recommending approval.
Representative Morgan.
I move that the committee accept the LFO recommendation on package 9 in the administrative area.
Thank you. Discussion? Objection? Motion carries.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Item number 13 is budget note. It's the first budget note that I referred to earlier, directing the department to report on the status of aligning the public share fire fund accounting system with the state's budget information system by no later than April 2004. That's about the same time that they are engaged in developing their budget for the next biennium and should be able to report the changes that they are able to make to incorporate in their budget process.
Mr. Chair, is the report to be made to the e-board subcommittee?
Yes.
Thank you. Mr. Chair.
Representative Morgan.
I would move that the committee accept the LFO recommendation on budget note number 1 relating to realigning the public share fire fund accounting system.
And could you state, or let's have it on the record, and reporting back to the emergency board then. Okay. You've heard the motion. Objection. Discussion. Objection.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Item number 14 is the second budget note for this program area. The Department of Forestry is directed to work with the Legislative Fiscal Office and Department of Administrative Services to review its positions to determine which positions can be combined by adding months or eliminated to reduce the number of unnecessary positions and full-time equivalents
in the agency, and the department shall provide a report to the emergency board not later than April 2004, the results of this review in time to incorporate it into the agency's budget development for 2005-07.
Let me take a pause here and just ask the department if this is doable, if you have any issues here.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, it is doable, and we don't have any issues. If I could just add, for us, this budget note represents the continuation of the discussion that we've had with both Budget Management Division and LFO over the last 6 weeks regarding vacancies, and it gives all of us an opportunity to keep that conversation and discussion going.
Sure. Representative Morgan.
Mr. Seely, is this issue mostly related to the seasonals, that you're combining partial FTEs into full FTEs?
Chair Messerly, Representative Morgan, that is part of it, because the vacancy information that we're all working with right now was really the information frozen as of February, I believe.
March.
Mm-hmm. And so that catches us as an agency some different way than it might had it been in the middle of summer, for example, with our seasonal workload. And so, yes, that's part of it, is to address that. And also, we want to continue to work with legislative, fiscal, and budget management in examining our position utilization right now. Gives us the opportunity to continue to do that.
Is it my understanding that in talking with Ms. Jordan, that we had a budget note similar to this last session, but with the special sessions, no one had time to really end your fire seasons. We just didn't have time to get much done. Is that?
Mr. Chair, I don't think we had a budget note in this agency. There were some other natural resource agencies that had one, but not this one.
I don't think we did.
Mr. Jordan, are there also issues here related to vacant positions where the funding is used for other things?
We've taken care of some of that with shifting funding to other program areas, but it's not, I don't think that's a huge problem in this agency. Part of the problem that we have with this is that pieces of each position are budgeted in multiple program areas, and it's hard to track a position from one. You know, if you want to make a reduction in forest practices, for example, it's attached, that position or those FTE are attached to other areas that are important. So there's a lot of juggling that has to go on in order to make a reduction in any part of their budget. And that has created segmented positions throughout the agency at this point.
Well, how do you deal then with the situation, like, for instance, where you have a service forester that's out in a field office, but when it's fire season, he gets called off to manage a fire?
Chair Messerly, Representative Morgan, in that specific case, typically the service forester in their position are funded in service forestry funds in the biennial budget. Yet when they get called upon to report to a fire and do fire duty work, they then begin to code their time to the fire code or the fire funding for that particular fire. And for a period of time, at least a week or however long they're deployed, they may in fact have then some savings generated in their service forestry funding, but the fire program pays for that time that they're out. Typically, that's how we operate the militia, those folks who are not directly funded in the fire program, but who do work in the fire program.
So in your budget, that service forester would be 100% service forester and paid for with whatever funds that service forestry program, and then his involvement in firefighting would be accounted just as a subaccount or something off of that.
That's correct, and it shows in the fire program budget typically as temporary time or overtime available for that kind of a change.
But I can see that getting to the bottom of this is going to be kind of problematic because of all the how the agency changes gears in fire season, and everybody heads off and doing those jobs rather than what they're really on the books to do.
Right, and there's a certain amount of double budgeting in this budget as a part of that as well. So we need to be able to figure out how that is all fitting together to make it as clean as we can when it gets here.
Mr. Chair, if you're ready for a motion.
I'm ready, Representative Morgan.
I move that the committee accept the LFO recommendation on budget note number 2 in the administrative area.
Is there discussion? Is there objection? Motion carries.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The next section is the debt service program. This is the creates the program to separate it from administration in the amount of $3,285,488. That would be item number 20, LFO package 6, to shift it from. We've already taken out, now you've approved of taking out, this is putting it back in.
So currently debt service is part of the administrative budget, and you're going to take it out and make it a separate line item?
Correct.
That makes sense. Mr. Chair.
Cindy Morgan.
I move that the committee accept the LFO recommendation on package 6 as it relates to debt service becoming a separate line item.
Thank you. You've heard the motion. Is there a discussion? Objection? Motion carries.
Item number 21 is in the Forest Fire Protection Program. This is the agency had proposed package 111, most efficient level, providing additional resources for agency firefighting efforts, $6 million other funds. However, the agency did not identify a source of those funds, so I am not recommending this package. If funds become available, the agency can request an increase in limitation from the emergency board.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Morgan.
This is not an easy one and not one that I wish I was making, but I do recommend that the committee accept the LFO recommendation on Package 111 in the Forest Fire Protection area.
Is that a recommendation or a motion?
That was a motion.
Okay, thank you. Representative Johnson.
The temptation to vote against this is almost overwhelming given what the issue area that we're talking about. I'm going to support the motion, but with the same reluctance I think the maker of the motion has expressed. I don't know if there's any way that the committee can indicate our continuing, assuming that there's unanimity of mind here, our continuing interest in seeing this program funded adequately in light of the potential risk that exists throughout the state. This is one that I wish we could identify the money for and know that we were going into a potentially catastrophic season adequately armed with the resources to do everything necessary to prevent conflagration.
Well said.
But I think there is a commitment here that from all of us as well as the department. Any other discussion? Objection? Motion carried.
Item number 22 is package 112. This is the fire program federal grants limitation. The agency is requesting a $12.6 million additional federal fund limitation for to receive and manage federal grants available through the National Fire Plan. Federal funds are proposed to support three FTE limited duration grant coordinators and two support staff. Workload under the program is unknown. The agency is required to request permission from the legislature to apply for new grants. I am recommending the formula grant portion of the package only and not the competitive grants. Since the agency does not have specific grant information, it's not known what the fiscal and ongoing costs are expected to be and what kind of match might be required. The agency is required to request permission to apply for any new federal grants and can request expenditure limitation from the emergency board when the specific grant information is available. So that is a reduction then of $2,880,446. And I've also added a limited duration program technician at the request of the agency for managing these federal grant programs.
Mr. Chair, if I might ask a question.
Yes, Cindy Morgan.
With relation to the competitive grant piece of this, what's the time frame?
Senator Messerly, Representative Morgan, in terms of the federal grants that come through both the U.S. Forest Service and the Bureau of Land Management, we're poised really at this point and over this summer and early fall to see what the next federal fiscal year does look like. And so this recommendation by legislative fiscal suits our needs just fine at this point in time. We may, if the grants that we think are out there do come to pass, we would appreciate an opportunity to come back to any board and request those, but at this point, this will serve us well.
Follow up, Mr. Chair.
Follow up.
So both of these grants are for federal fiscal year 04.
Senator Messer, or Chair Messerly, Representative Morgan, no, there our estimate of biennial, the formula-driven piece is our estimate of the biennial need for our standard formula-driven grants, like the State Fire Assistance Grant and Volunteer Fire Assistance Grant and some of the National Fire Plan grants that are formula-driven. And again, it's our estimate of the biennial need for those pieces. And those are grants that we have worked with you all in this last interim on in terms of securing the initial approval for those, and they are continuing on into 03-05.
Okay, so that's just the expenditure limitation for them.
Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess I'm looking to try to preserve something on the record that would build in the ability of the agency to preserve nimbleness, to be able to respond to any federal offerings of financial assistance. Having run an agency and trying to get an e-board request lined up with all the series of approvals that you need, and having listened in on full ways and means when agency people are bludgeoned for lack of timeliness, I'd at least like to see some indication from the committee of our willingness to leave you the maximum flexibility and nimbleness, for lack of a better word, to be able to apply for any federal money that might drift through to aid states in battling wildfire, both in the short term and in the longer term.
Representative Johnson, I'd be willing to put on the public record that I will withhold any objections to the timeliness issue.
Representative Morgan.
Mr. Chair, I move that the committee accept the LFO recommendation for package 112 in the Forest Fire Protection Fund.
Thank you. There's a motion. Is there a discussion? Is there objection? Motion carries.
Mr. Chair, item number 23 is package 113. This is Fire Program Administration and Contracting. Provides expenditure limitation and positions to handle increasing workloads in the cooperative fire program. This work consists of administering crew contracts, coordinating with other agencies, development of contracts and standards and training. The agency requested increasing the package by 2.96 FTE and $345,393 to manage and oversee this technical and complex program, and it would be funded by users of the contract crews. And I'm recommending approval of the governor's package and the addition to this package. Look up what the total is here.
So, Mr. Chair, if I might.
Representative Morgan.
These are positions then that will oversee the contracting of fire crews, and I think that all of us have seen that that's grown to be an incredibly complex kind of thing, and the safety issues have been pulled way to the front of the table here. And I'm glad to see that the agency is responding to the needs here.
I'm looking for a guarantee from the agency that no helicopters are going to sit on the ground unable to fly because of lack of coordination in any sector as a result of the approval of this package.
we will do the best we can in the darndest. Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Brown. This is when we need to hear from you.
Actually, one of the reasons this is only my, Mr. Chair, one of the reasons this is only my third day in office is I was at a meeting with dealing with fire in Missoula, and the former state forester, Jim Brown, and I sat down with the director of fire and aviation for the Forest Service and discussed this issue and the need to, you know, to hammer out the protocols and those kind of problems from last time. And I think everybody's aware of it, that it was a problem. And I think we're working on it.
Representative Johnson, I know you just to some degree, but I assume you have the same concerns for all the contracts.
I absolutely do, but this one is a particular irritation point with me, having provided helicopters to fires in my professional life and seeing what a mess this is. and how you can't use one machine on a BLM fire that's good on a Forest Service fire that's not good on a state fire,
no,
that's nuts. And we've discussed it thoroughly in this committee and have assurances from your two colleagues sitting at the table that everything humanly possible will be done to expedite machines fighting fires, not sitting on the ground waiting through bureaucratic red tape.
I just wanted to give you the total with the additional amount is $984,878, and then 10.34 FTE would be the total package after adding LFO's piece to the governor's recommended budget.
Representative Morgan?
Mr. Chair, I move that the committee accept the LFO recommendation on package 113 in the Forest Fire Protection Area.
Thank you. Is there discussion of the motion? Objection. Motion carries.
Item number 24, package 114, is the Emergency Fire Costs Committee's expenditure limitation. This is related to House Bill 2301, which we haven't passed out of here yet, and raises the annual expenditure limitation for the Oregon Forest Land Protection Fund from $10 million to $12.5 million, now $15 million. If you want to pass on this one until we get the House Bill 2301 resolved, I can come back to it.
I think that would be
okay.
A great program.
And we have approved item number 25. Item number 26 is the vacant position adjustment. In this program area, there is a $38,344 savings and 0.67 FTE.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Morgan.
I move that the committee accept the LFO recommendation number 2 relating to vacant position adjustments in forest fire protection.
You've heard the motion. Is there discussion? Objection. Motion carries.
We'll move on then to the next page, item number 30, because we've approved the others. LFO package number 6 is a position, or it's another technical adjustment to shift $4,075,893 from an interagency general fund transfer to special payment, shift $448 mass transit fee from non-limited to limited, and restore $622,643 for temporaries phased out in the base in error. I am recommending approval.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Morgan.
Can we get some additional information on the $4 million shift from interagency general fund to special payments? What's that all about?
I'm at Clark.
Chair Messerly and Representative Morgan, this has to do with the public share fire fund money, the general fund match to landowner assessments throughout the state. Of the $20 million that we project is needed approximately for 0305, about $4 million of that is dollars that match the landowner assessments in the three operating associations, Coos, Douglas, and Walker Range. And it would be to our benefit, the state's benefit, to make this transfer of dollars in our biennial budget into a special payment category so that we can actually release those dollars more efficiently to the three operating associations twice in the biennium, each at the beginning of each of their fiscal years. It lets us get those monies to them right at the beginning of the fiscal year, which is in July, and it's fairly important for them to have that money at that point in time. And it also, from the biennial perspective, simply lets our books reflect that change more transparently. It's more visible to all of us that that has occurred. Right now, because this $4 million is all part of the overall $20 million, it's not budgetarily at the biennial level as clear or as transparent. So we really want to just be able to get the money to the associations more efficiently at the beginning of each fiscal year and make it appear and show in the biennial budget system more transparent.
Thank you.
Representative Morgan?
I move that the committee accept the LFO recommendation on package 6 in the forest fire protection area.
You've heard the motion. Is there discussion? Objection? Motion carries.
Mr. Chair, I would pass over item number 31, which is part of the discussion that we're having in House Bill 2301 related to the base fire protection piece of it, and move on to item number 32, package LFO package number 8, are the other position adjustments for this program area. It eliminates a net total of 10 positions and 1.58 FTE to add months to an existing fire officer position, reclassify 9 student worker laborers to labor 1, and consolidate cooperative fire positions. The package results in a net increase of 115,000. Actually, it's a net decrease of $53,509 and 1.58 FTE.
So the last sentence should be taken off.
It should, the dollar amount there should be, yes, it should be a net decrease of $53,509. I recommend approval of the changes in classification with no step increase for reclassifications. And that's throughout the budget. Wherever there's a reclassification, I recommend it without a step increase.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Morgan.
I move that the committee accept the LFO recommendation on Package 8 in the Forest Fire Protection Area.
Heard the motion. Is there discussion? Objection? Motion carries.
Mr. Chair, item number 33 is the budget note that was referred to with House Bill 2301. I'll read it, but I think we should pass over approval of it until we have resolved our issues on that bill. This is the budget note reads, to ensure that sufficient funds are available to reasonably respond to anticipated emergency fire protection needs over time, the Department of Forestry is directed to form a work group including legislators, the Emergency Fire Cost Committee, Department of Administrative Services, landowners, and the Legislative Fiscal Office to examine the funding mechanism for emergency forest fires. The review will include analysis of the fund's revenue sources, types, amounts, and equity, and coverage of fire suppression expenses beyond the capacity of the fund, including whether to continue the commercial insurance program, and if so, options for how the costs of the insurance should be paid. One of the principal considerations for the work group to consider is maintaining the historic relationship of the public share to the landowner cost share. Department shall report the outcomes of this review and recommendations to the emergency board by its meeting September 2004.
Okay.
The next program area is equipment pool. The item number 35, vacant position adjustment. This program is reduced by $147,491 and 1.42 FTE as part of the vacancy savings adjustment.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Morgan.
I move that the committee accept the LFO recommendation for package 2 in the equipment pool that relates to vacant position adjustments.
Is there a discussion? Is there objection? Motion carries.
Item number 39, the agency has requested LFO package number 6, air operation seasonal pilot position. This adds a seasonal pilot, airplane pilot, for 9 months at 0.75 FTE, $82,525 to augment an existing pilot position and eliminate overtime of that pilot. It consolidates two positions, number 351 and number 288, into one position to offset the cost. So it's a net increase of $60,879 and 0.33 FTE. And I recommend approval.
Thank you. Representative Johnson, why did I think you'd have a comment?
I just thought maybe I might. Is this going to be go through the regular advertisement and state hiring process, or is this an internal candidate that is moved around?
Chair Messerly is representing council. I know this could go through the normal process. Just as a little bit of background, prior to the special sessions this interim, the department had 2 full-time pilot positions, and through the process of House Bill 5100, we reduced one of those 2 down to essentially took out the general fund portion of one of those positions, which brought it to a part-time position and only a few months left in other funds. This package increases that back up to 9 months and allows us to have what we think is a viable seasonal position now, which is certainly can meet our needs.
assuming we get out of here in time for fire season, Mr. Chair, I was just keeping my options open.
You mean if we don't approve these budgets, we're going to save money?
Okay, Representative Morgan?
I could make some very wise comment here, but I'm just going to recommend that the committee accept the, I'm going to move that the committee accept the LFO recommendation on package 6 as it relates to the air operations seasonal pilot position in the equipment pool area.
Heard the motion. Is there discussion? Objection? Motion carries.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Moving on to State Forest, item number 40, package 131 is Tillamook interpretive positions. The agency requested providing staffing and services to operate the Tillamook Forest Interpretive Center, scheduled to open in 2005, and LFO is not recommending this package. The package increases cost to the State Forest management, potentially impacting distribution to the State Common School Fund and counties based on lowering distributions, but I recommend that the statutory distribution of State Forest revenue to the Department of Forestry be reviewed by the Joint Legislative Audit Committee in the interim to see if there is see if that's really necessary and allow some increase in distribution to the counties. So that would be budget note number 6 when we get to that.
I'm going to ask the department if they wish to make comments at this point. You don't have to.
I'll try to make a few comments. I'm trying to get up to speed on this issue a little bit. In fact, Mrs. McClanahan was actually in my office this morning to give me more background on the Tillamook and where all that came from. And I understand there's some concern about the fact that these dollars are spent on the Tillamook Interpretive Center and not necessarily benefiting all the beneficiaries of that fund. And, you know, I think it's fair to go into this kind of review and look at that whole issue and involve all the stakeholders and see where we end up.
Thank you.
For the record, when we decided to get involved, we, the state of Oregon, decided to get involved in the Interpretive Center. I carried the bill on the floor of the Senate, and I think the Interpretive Center is a great thing, and it's going to hopefully educate a lot of people about what we do and why we do it and how we do it. But the pledge that was made in committee and made on the record and that I made to folks on the floor when I carried the bill was that the dollar that we put into that fund was the only money the state was going to put into this. That it was going to be, I mean, a nonprofit was going to go out there, they were going to raise the money, they were going to run the program, that wasn't going to be one of these where the state got involved in managing it. We were just going to help them get up and running. And it seems as though often lately I keep turning over another piece where the state is involved in helping to make this happen, even though we committed not to do that. And considering that there are a number of people, number of counties out there that are supposed to be getting money, taking some of that away from all of the rest of them and giving it just to one, actually changes the formula in a little bit and is worth taking a look at.
Thank you. Representative Morgan?
Just to kind of build on the good senator's remarks, I agree with you that I think that the Interpretive Center has great value educationally and socially to educate people about what the history of the forest is and how the whole thing came to be. But I, too, am very cautious at this point about going back on the original promise, which was that there was going to be money raised from the private sector to fund a lot of the ongoing expenses that were relating to this. And I think that in the meantime, the economic sands have really shifted in the state. And with the issues that we're facing in trying to get money into the K-12 system, that it would be very difficult for us, I think, to justify to the people of Oregon spending money on these positions that should be going into the school system.
I might add that lunchtime, actually, today,
I was talking to the director of parks, Mr. Carrier, and about another issue. But he did mention, he brought this up and mentioned that he is willing and interested in having a discussion how this should fit into the parks program.
And that is, excuse me, Mr. Chair, my budget note number 6 was directing the department to work with the Oregon Parks and Recreation Department to establish an interagency agreement for operating the interpretive center using Measure 66 lottery money, and then to report back to the agency. I mean, to the emergency board, I'm sorry.
Mr. Chair, you ready for a motion?
I have Representative Morgan.
I move that the committee accept LFO recommendation on package 131 relating to the Tillamook interpretive positions in the state forest part of the budget.
You heard the motion. Committee, I'm clarifying with staff. There's two different numbers here, 417 and 418.
$418 is the right number.
Okay.
It's a typo.
Thank you. Is there a discussion of the motion? Objection? Motion carries. Committee, with that, we have run out of time. We are scheduled to have a work session again on this budget on Thursday. And tomorrow we will be doing the OWEB budget. So with that, we'll close the work session and adjourn the committee meeting. Thank you.